Ready.
All right, we'll go ahead and start here. My name is Lee. I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Lee.
I am convinced I'm a sexaholic, and that's critical. This is the Step 10 study, and I know we were talking before the meeting started. There were a couple guys in here ahead of it, and this step actually, in my experience, can be worked pretty early, even before you quite got the fourth step or things like that done. And I think the reason is because it involves a kind of a snap inventory taking of where I've been wrong and trying to understand that and admitting the wrong. So, I mean, life goes on, right? I mean, we get in recovery. And so, and I also look at kind of the steps as building a course of bricks, like a bricklayer does. You kind of have your first step course you're still working on. You got that course the rest of your life as far as that goes. And then you got second step pieces you're putting in, then you get third step, and the fourth step is a formal thing, but you're actually getting that awareness and trying to come to grow. And so that's what I'm trying to get at, is there is a tenth step brick here, what I'm saying? Even if you're not past the first step, for example. So that's what this is about. One of the things that struck me in the book, I'm just going to read a few paragraphs here. There's one little section in the book on page 133. It's always struck me about the tenth step. I mentioned last night in my talk that I don't think I would be still married if it wasn't for the 10th step of really trying to look at my part and then trying to admit that. She knew I was sorry. I said I was sorry a lot before sobriety. She knew I was a sorry dude, But when I started admitting that I was wrong, that I did that, and I know I'm sorry for that harm done, and I am going to try to do better, that was a lot different of an amends. And that's what the 10th step is about, trying to do that. But there's a story in the book on page 133. It says, "I'm the key." I'm just going to read that story. It goes on two pages here. The following is a story from one member's experience that illustrates the change of attitude that is the key to this most important amends-making principle in our program. And here's the story. "I finally had it with my wife. She had to get help to change herself or else. Married to her for years and now sober, I guess I knew when she was all loused up. I had her diagnosed as a television addict, rebellious, blind to see herself, and powerless to change. The description sounded disturbingly familiar, but I was too sure of myself to think it could ever apply to me. I had her nailed and felt pretty strongly about the whole thing. It was an ultimatum, shape up or ship out. I left for the weekend on a fishing trip with another sexaholic to get away from the whole situation. On the way home, finally talking freely about our identical problems, the light dawned. I was the key, and my attitude was wrong. I was waiting for her to change, not really realizing that my very attitude made that impossible. The woman is united to me. Good or bad, she is united to me, spiritually. I don't understand this, but when my attitude is negative, rejecting, censors, she is united to my spiritual illness. I saw that if God had waited for me to shape up before he began working on for my recovery and healing, I'd be lost or dead. When I was still defective was when he was doing the most to call me back. I see this now looking back on the whole thing. He was patiently leading me out years before I had the slightest self-awareness and honesty. At my lowest, he was leading me with his most magnificent, selfless love for me, in spite of my wrong, because I was defective and powerless. And this I discovered on the road back from the lake was how I was to treat and love my wife, not as a wife, but as another person in the program, whether she was or not. I was to treat her as God and others had been treating me. As my SA friend and I drove back from those honest hours together, my attitude changed. And in returning, I could tell from her first response to me, that first cautious glance, that she responded to my change in attitude toward her. She sensed it, unspoken. She knew it. And just as suddenly as I had changed, so did she. I could feel it. My negative had changed to embrace her, whatever she was. And whatever she was, changed. The woman is united to me. I don't understand this, but now instead of being united to my resentment, fault-finding, condemning, rejecting spirit, She's united to my own healing. I don't want to be, but I am the key. What I am is what I get. In the measure I give is the measure I get back. I pray God for the willingness to take this key and unlock the door to love. And that's the end of that story. And it's always struck me, and you know, early in sobriety, it ticked me off, frankly, that why couldn't I just be in a bad mood and just kind of have my little grumpy stuff and not affect the whole household? Because it would affect the whole house. It would affect my wife, my kids. And why can't I just have my little space to be? It didn't happen. Wherever I was, it was amazing how the household was led into that. On the positive side, just like this story was. And so I don't understand it either, but it turns out that I am the key. And maybe it has to do with the scriptural things about being head of the household in a spiritual way. I don't know, but that's neither here nor there. The fact is, my evidence, it shows that I'm the key. And I'm the one in recovery, you know. That makes it me responsible. And I've seen now recently, I don't know if you guys were here last night, but I was talking about how my wife and I are in getting counseling here and trying to renew that whole awareness and healing between ourselves. And, you know, I'm finding that when I went into that counseling with an open... I went in there, you know, obviously, you know how it is, you know what I'm going to say, to fix her. But when I surrendered that at the door of that counselor's office 2 weeks ago and just went in there and said, hey, look, here's what I am, alcoholic, sexaholic, I've been compulsive, I've had rage, you know, and she's had to live with, I just kind of put that out on the table, just, here's the deal, you know, here's who I am. It allowed her a chance to open up, and yes, 60%, 70% of what she talked about was how she had to live with me, but she wasn't angry, but she just talked about what it was like living with me, and I listened to that. But there was that little 30% that she says, you know, I know this is my stuff and my childhood and things like that. It was neat to see that miracle. And then we went back the second time, and 70% was most on her stuff, you know, trying to understand her self-awareness. So I'm seeing it happen to me in living color here, even in the last couple weeks, that if I can surrender that attitude towards my spouse, amazing things change. And even bosses at work, by the way, if I can surrender that attitude about the boss at work, things start to change there too. So the other thing I did here, I've got a handout for you guys here. There'll be a quiz at the end. Here, I'm going to pass those around and just bring around the circle. What I did in the past week or so is I took the AA Big Book. This is all plagiarized. I took the AA Big Book and I looked at page 84 and 86 where they talk about the 10th step in there. And then I took the whole 10th step of, the 12 and 12, page 88 to 95. And what I did was I took pen and paper and I just outlined key aspects of that whole thing on about 4 or 5 sheets of paper. And then I sat down and said, okay, what does this all mean? How do I kind of take both those pieces and put it together? And here's what I came up with is this outline here. And the top of the outline, really, if you look at the main outline there, it says we need to spot, we need to admit, correct, and then we receive. And it's kind of a neat summary. I spot my defects on a daily basis or hourly basis. I admit them. I work towards correcting. And then the 10th step promises come in and I receive. And just one level deeper here on some of these bullets here, and then we'll open it up for sharing on this thing here, is that, you know, during the day, the 10th step is done a couple different ways. There's during the day when I'm just going through my day and all of a sudden I get that belly button barometer thing, like, oh, this wasn't a good thing. I just got out of conversation and I may have slammed somebody, or I just sent that email off and it's like, I should have thought about that email. Tried to work the retrieve button, it didn't work. And that's one aspect, is the through the day. And then the other one is at the end of the day. And I do it only for about a minute or two at night, because usually I'm pretty darn sleepy, to be honest. But I get on my knees every night. I thank God for keeping me sober. I usually pray the Our Father. I pray the Our Father too. And then I just reflect on the day, just looking at kind of summing up the day. Usually it's a lot of gratitude. Usually I'm thanking God for various aspects of the day. Morning, Charles. And then if there's something that I need to correct, you know, I try to think about that. And 9 times out of 10, it's something with my wife or whatever, something, you know, whatever, I was kind of like grumpy or whatever it was, and I try to look at that. And so, anyway, this gives you a little bit of an outline, is lack of self-restraint, looking at that. Selfishness, dishonesty, fear, and resentment. You know, those are underlined because the A Big Book talks a lot about those. Where was I dishonest, fearful, resentful? And then, you know, stuff I struggled with through the years is where was I quick-tempered? You know, just that reaction instead of response. And then something I love and I haven't given up yet, and I'm working on in my 6 and 7 step, is the power-driven argument. You know, I was going to share this tomorrow, but I think it's appropriate to share this in this context here, is that I just sat with a guy at an auto deal. I was getting my truck worked on, and this guy was at this auto deal, and we just started having this conversation. And he ended up telling me about a class he took with John Wooden, the basketball coach. And in that class, he brought up this guy, as it turns out, picked him from the audience. And John Wooden threw him a basketball, and he caught the basketball. And John said, okay. And then he had a pro basketball player with him, and he gave the basketball to that pro, and the pro threw the ball. It about blew his hands off. I mean, this Tony I was talking to said it just like couldn't believe how fast this basketball came to him. And John said, okay, which pass did you want to receive? The one from me or the one from this fellow? He said, from you, obviously. He says, tell you what, you're going to have all kinds of people in your life that you're going to be interacting with. And if you throw the basketball the same way to all of them, you're gonna hurt people. You have to adjust how you throw the basketball. And for me, what happens 9 times out of 10 is I work during the day, and we're in our environment, our professional environment, we can throw the basketball pretty hard to each other. We're just solving problems and debating and, you know, not agreeing with each other in a constructive way. When I get home at night, if I throw that basketball the same way, it about blows her knuckles off. And that was a powerful story. I just heard that 1.5 weeks ago. And I'm trying to get that through my thick head. You know, how am I throwing the basketball? So the power-driven argument doesn't work at home. The pride constructive criticism, I put that in quotes there. I always loved doing that. I still do. Feeling superior, you know, looking at that whole deal. And then the one I adopted last year for a little while was sulking, silent scorn, which was my sponsor told me to leave my wife alone. So I thought he meant you just don't talk to her at all. That's not what he meant. He said, no. And making unreasonable demands, expectations of others, emotional hangovers. So anyway, after the spot, then we have to admit, and this is where I take into my own self, maybe with my sponsor, and just try to look at that self-examination, you know. The A Big Book talks about drawing up the balance sheet of the credits, you know, the good things we did right, and the gratitude we have for, you know, being a channel of God's love, and then the debts, you know, where do we do wrong? What were our motives? That's another really powerful thing for correcting. Because, you know, I can be making these wrongs every couple weeks or whatever it is, and if I don't understand the motives behind it, guess what? I'm going to keep doing that same old thing. That's the insanity of it, right? And then where were we disturbed? Anger, jealousy, envy, pride, hurt pride? Did I get caught into big shotism? Do we make others our God? I do that. Make my boss God or even my wife God. And this is the one I put in big letters because it's one I'm working on at least right now. But I was amazed to hear that. See in the 12 and 12, this is what he wrote in there. He says, "Watch for rationalization, our ancient enemy." And talk with the sponsor or another. And then here's a neat thing too. And this is the power of the imagination. And God gave us this as a gift. It visualize what we might have done better. You know, and I'll think about that. You guys probably have that too. Is that after that? You know, that whole thing has blown up. Go upstairs, talk. And usually for me, it's the next day, to be honest with you. I usually can't see it that night. But I'll wake up the next morning, I'll be thinking about the interaction with my wife, and I'll go, you know what? I could have said that whole thing differently. You know, when she confronted me about something, I could have said, you know, honey, I'm not seeing what you're seeing right now, but I'm going to think about it, be open to it, and, you know, I'm sorry it's disturbed you right now, and let me go look at that. Yeah, that would have been a whole lot better than, you know, no way, you know, whatever the stuff, throw the basketball back at her, right? So the visualization, how might I do better? And then the correct, you know, abandon fear and hatred and embrace love. Make amends quickly with honest regret for harm done. I kind of like that phrase. My sponsor gave me that, and I worked an amends with my daughter recently, and he told me, make sure, you know, harm done. We don't use that word very often, but harm, I regret any harm I've done to you. And then practice restraint of tongue and pen, and I added emails. I always say, don't send the first three, the first two emails you think of. Write those first two emails, and then re-edit or send a whole new email of that third one, because usually that's the one that's the most constructive. and the big book says this is our number one priority, is this restraint. And that's my wife would be laughing right now if she was watching this workshop. Keynotes to harmony of and others, it talks about in there, is show kindness, tolerance, understanding, and above all, love. You know, and what is love? You know, that's a classic, right? Many songs written about that. The best definition I heard was from St. Thomas Aquinas. Love is the unselfish willing of good for others. Unselfish willing of good for others. So if I want goodness to happen in your life, that's one aspect of love. And if I do it in an unselfish way, which may mean giving, may mean being quiet, not having to be right, whatever it is, it's an unselfish willing of good for another. And then something that's tough to do in the heat of the moment is step back and think. Now, this is in the corrective phase, but pause when agitated and ask for direction. Thy will be done. And then it also says that see that others are emotionally ill and frequently wrong. I rather like that line. The next thing is forgive. Love and tolerance is our code. There's a line in the big book that essentially says this in a different place. It says, you know, we see that these people are sick people. And I always remember that line. Yeah, my father-in-law is sick as anything or whatever. And then the next line I didn't realize was there. It says, we need to see how we can be helpful to these people. It's like, oh, geez, you know. Anyway, love and tolerance is our code. And then we remember that, and this is in the 12 and 12, it says this, growing in love will take time, and you will experience the pains of growing up. Now, I don't know about you guys, but as addicts, and almost our society trained us this way, is that when you see pain, you run the other way, right? I mean, that's, I don't know about you, but there's, even though there's these things like no pain, no gain, or whatever, right? But man, but in this process, we're going to see pain of growing up. I'm seeing it right now. And then we ask forgiveness, and we forgive ourselves. And then as a result, there's these things, you know, there's a lot of promises in the big book. There's the fifth step promises, there's ninth step promises that we read in our meeting, but we don't talk much about this. There are some tenth step promises. And after we've gone through steps 1 through 10 and start to live this, here's one of the things, we'll find that we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, and even lust. We will seldom be interested in acting out. If tempted, we will recoil from it as a hot flame. That's true. I'm seeing that. We will react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. Of course, you worked your butt off on the steps. We will see that our attitude towards lust and acting out will have been given to us without any thought or effort. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. And this is how we respond as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And that's what this is all about, trying to live on a daily basis. And even just a quick one on that, you know, before we open the meeting up, our whole new attitude towards lust and acting out. You know, I'm a sexaholic, and that means there's a deep desire to control and enjoy lust naturally. And so I've had to struggle over the years with, you know, going on a business trip and then there's the TV and turn it on, it's like, you know, get away from that type of stuff. I've gotten caught into different things like that a dozen, dozen and a half, maybe two dozen times over 21 years where I get something. The internet wasn't around when I, so I've clicked on the internet probably 8 or 10 times over the last 10 years and gotten to places like, okay, let's get the heck out of here. But I did it. You know, I got out, but I got into it in the first place. And what I'm trying to lead towards is that most of those times, yes, there was the fire that got lit, but there was other times, and it's been, you know, it's happened more recent when I've slipped into that, where I get sad. I get sad for the women that have allowed themselves to be in that position. There's a sadness. And I never had that sadness before when I was looking at the penthouses or whatever. So what I'm trying to say is, yes, I'm still a sexaholic. I'm a man. I'm still a sexaholic. I still see the nice-looking woman, and I'm like, wow, okay, God, please bless her. Take my lust. And I move on. But there's also when I've gotten deeper into that darker, when I've fallen into that darker place, the attitude has changed where all of a sudden I'll sit there and go, man, I just feel sad. And God bless these people. And then I'll click the red X or whatever it is and say, let's get out of here. And, you know, and then I call somebody and I'll talk about it or talk about it in a meeting and then look at what was motivating me to click on that in the first place, of course. But the idea that I'm sad was never, ever there before. You know. So that is a promise that's coming true slowly by slowly for me, too. So I'm the key. You know, my willingness is the key in my wife relationship, in my relationship with God. And this 10th step is crucial, crucial to it. So I'm just going to open it up here and let everybody kind of share their experience, strength, and hope. Or if you have some questions or whatever, we can discuss it. Thanks.